The man in the dust had a phalanx of friends. They were sturdy-looking men, perhaps fishermen. Gently but firmly they were keeping the crushing crowds away. But still, David could see as he approached, wraith-like, some of the people were coming near, reaching out a tentative hand to touch a robe, even stroke a lock of hair.
"I do not think he's deaf. Humiliated, broken, need remain the center of our obsession with Jesus, as it has been for 2,000 years. For me, the zenith of his life is, I have witnessed it, is the moment when Pilate produces him, already tortured and bloody, to be mocked by the soldiers, sacrificed by his own people. With everything he had intended, apparently in ruins, perhaps already feeling abandoned by God, Jesus should have been crushed, and yet he stood straight. A man immersed in his time, defeated and yet unbeaten. He is Gandhi. He is St. Francis. He is Wilberforce. He is Elizabeth Fry. He is Father Damien among the lepers. He is his own people, and the dreadful suffering they would endure in the name of the religion founded in his name. The major religions have all faced crises as their origins and tangled pasts have become open to scrutiny. None of them have emerged unscathed. Some have collapsed altogether. But religion is not simply about morality or the personalities of founders and practitioners. It is about the numinous, a higher dimension of our nature. And there are still those who hunger for the transcendent, the meaning of it all. Already cleansed, reformed, refounded, the Church is beginning to offer consolation to many people left bewildered by the demolition of privacy and historic certainty. Perhaps we have lost Christ, but we have found Jesus, and his example can still lead us into an unknown future, even if that future holds only the wormwood, and our religion's only remaining role is to comfort us. And yet, Easter still holds surprises for us, for one of the most peculiar yet stubborn legends about the life of Jesus has, against all expectation, been born out. The man in the dust was thin, his hair severely pulled back, prematurely graying at the temples. His robe was stained with dust and trailed in the dirt. His nose was prominent, proud and Roman, his eyes black, fierce, intelligent. He seemed angry and was drawing in the dust with one finger. This silent, brooding man had the measure of the Pharisees without even the need to speak. David stepped forward. Beneath his feet he could feel the dust of this Capernaum marketplace. He reached forward to the hem of that robe. But of course his fingers slid through the cloth, and though the sun dimmed, David felt nothing. The man in the dust looked up and gazed directly into David's eyes. David cried out. The Galilean light dissipated, and the concerned face of Bobby hovered before him. As a young man, following a well-established trade route with his uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, Jesus visited the tin mine area of Cornwall. With companions, he traveled further inland, as far as Glastonbury, at the time a significant port, where he studied with the Druids, and helped design and build a small house on the future site of Glastonbury Abbey. This visit is remembered, after a fashion, in scraps of local folklore. We have lost so much. The harsh glare of the Wormcam has revealed so many of our fables to be things of shadows and whispers. Atlantis has evaporated like dew. King Arthur has stepped back into the shadows from which he never truly emerged. And yet it is, after all, true, as Blake sang, that those feet in ancient time did walk upon England's mountains green. 22. The Verdict. In Christmas week, 2037, Kate's trial concluded. The courtroom was small, paneled in oak, and the stars and stripes hung limply at the back of the room. The judge, the attorneys, and the court officers sat in grave splendor before rows of benches containing a few scattered spectators. Bobby,
officials from our world, reporters tapping notes into soft screens.